Hey everyone, welcome to the latest episode of Techish. I'm your host, Abba Desi, joined with
Michael Behane, the other host.
I was trying to like come up with a really fancy way to introduce us, and I was just
the
like,
host no. plus the other host. So anyways, we are gonna break down the latest tech and pop culture news. I think let's just get cracking with the first story on this one. You watched the Facebook little conference they have, you know?
Oh my gosh.
It was very entertaining. You should have sat there and watched it like I did. Nah, I didn't watch it.
No one laughed at the jokes.
It's amazing though, because like, I feel like Apple pioneered, or Steve Jobs pioneered the whole kind of product launch, and you know, he had the charisma to pull it off. But now I see all these other companies doing it with their CEOs, and like even Apple, like Tim Cook, as great as he seems, he doesn't have that charisma. But anyway, I was watching the Mark Zuckerberg version, and he was, you know, talking about all the latest products for Facebook and stuff. And the whole thing was pivot to privacy. They were you laughing. Even he was laughing. That's the worst thing. Like, even he was kind of like, I know we don't have the best track record. And he started cracking up, but
that
nobody.
Was supposed to be a joke,
yeah,
wasn't
and
it?
Nobody was laughing
That's
with
not
it.
It's funny, man.
It's not funny.
You messed up people's lives.
You broke democracy. Like, this ain't a joke. Like, so, anyways, he was like, I mean, in terms of what they were doing for privacy, it wasn't that concrete to me. Essentially, the roadmap is they're going to integrate Messenger, Instagram, and WhatsApp into a singular app, and it's going to be end to end encrypted.
Mm.
So before, WhatsApp was end-to-end encrypted, and I don't think Messenger was, and definitely Instagram wasn't, but now all of them are going to be, and there's going to be a more of an emphasis on groups or on Facebook.com or on the app.
Yeah.
Moving away from the whole like timeline, you know, centric
feed
and consumption for the whole world. What do you think? Like, what do you think about the whole privacy thing? And then what do you think about the whole pivot to groups as well? Like, does any of it make sense or work?
It's so interesting because I woke up and was reading the news. This is the day after that big event at Facebook.
Yeah.
And I saw this screenshot of Mark Zuckerberg on stage with this headline, Facebook says the future is privacy. And I thought I was looking at like satire.
The Onion or something.
I honestly was like, yeah. I was just like, is this like a Black Mirror episode? Am I in like some alternate reality? And I just think the fact that a multi-billion dollar company could have the audacity to put their CEO on stage and say that when they're the very same company that have been proven to pay miners to mine data from their phones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no proof of it that's been taken to court, but almost certainly WhatsApp is listening and then the Facebook ads are being served accordingly. I don't know. There's just like all this shady stuff that suggests that there's been serious invasion of privacy.
Mm.
And for me, it's just like, now you're trying to say that the future is private.
Yeah.
And let's not kid ourselves. Facebook isn't changing their revenue model. Right?
They're not.
They are still going to rely on every input that we give them to sell advertising to companies, right?
Right, yep.
And I just kind of think, like, when you say privacy, it's like, you know, this is like 1984, where words take on two meanings, and, you know, there's this double think. It's like, you're saying privacy, but what does privacy mean? Like, now they're going to destroy the concept of privacy.
It's like a 1984 type thing, yeah, for real.
Because it's like, I'm sorry, wait, what is privacy? Because I thought privacy was, I decide what you know about me and what I am willing to share.
Right.
But the reality remains, the terms and conditions that I signed up to whenever I first decided to create a Facebook account, are they going to renege on those? Are they going to recede some? Are they going to cede some of those rights? Are they going to give me some of my liberties back? Or is it already too late? Because you can't say that you're all about privacy when the fact is you've already made us sign away everything we have and do to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even Instagram, every time I post a photo on Instagram, that becomes a property of Instagram. So what, is Instagram going to come back and be like, oh, hey, now you can double opt in? Are you going to let me double opt in every time I post a photo? Are you going to let me double opt in every time I do content? I don't know. So it just, it feels very empty.
Yeah.
I'm very concerned for the sake of humanity about what the word privacy means anymore. And there's so many people using Facebook products, Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram, a significant proportion of the world. I mean, it was already 1 billion active users on Instagram a few months ago.
Yep.
Maybe that's even grown. So we know at least 1 in 6, 7 people in the world are on these products. So I think that, I don't know, I think that's kind of disturbing for many, many reasons. And then the second point around groups, I feel that they're observing the way that people communicate, and more importantly, the way people share information. And a lot of notable journalists have already highlighted the fact that fewer people are broadcasting widely, but rather choosing specific people to share this with. And we've seen the product innovations like close friends on Instagram, WhatsApp groups, iMessage groups. So it makes sense that they classically in for Facebook follow the trend a bit behind the others that right. actually set yeah. it. But what I think is a bit, you know, the more cynical take I take on that is also, is this Facebook's lifeline, right?
Mm.
Because Facebook as a product is kind of struggling with the key demographics.
So Facebook.com as opposed to yes. WhatsApp and Instagram, you mean? Yeah.
As opposed to Instagram, as opposed to WhatsApp. So the way that they maybe see, you know, keeping Facebook itself alive
mm.
is by attaching it to the other products that are more popular.
Yeah, and it's interesting because there was an article you sent me actually about, I mean, a lot of it was conjecture, but they were talking about why did the CEO of Instagram bounce? In this article, they were basically saying that part of the reason why Kevin Systrom, the Instagram founder, left was because he was unhappy with how they were trying to kind of leech off Instagram's growth.
Yes.
And kind of try to revitalize the main Facebook platform, and then they were kind of encroaching on their territory. And yeah, so that's a thing. I think the main Facebook platform growth has definitely slowed, but I still feel like it's immensely popular. Like my dad and all these uncles and aunties, they spend their whole lives on there now. Like,
here's another question. Is Facebook too big to fail?
I don't think anything is too big to fail. If they hadn't purchased Instagram and if they hadn't purchased WhatsApp, so if the government bodies in charge of acquisitions were like, nah, we're not going to allow that, I would fear for Facebook's future, because the amount of time I spend within the original Facebook ecosystem is very low. Like, I don't have the Facebook app on my phone. I deleted Messenger from my phone. Pretty much whenever I do go on Facebook, I just get fake notifications. I call them where you just like, you go on there, so-and-so has posted this, so-and-so has posted that. Yeah. I was like, what's that got to do with
something
me?
Something you haven't seen since like 2012.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with me. This is like fake notifications. You see what I'm saying? So Facebook could have easily have been like a failing company right now. I personally believe, if it wasn't for those two amazing acquisitions, which I feel like are going to turn out to be two of the best acquisitions of all time, because Instagram as a platform is the future. WhatsApp is pretty much, you know, the basic infrastructure of everyone's social life, to be honest, especially out here in the UK. So they are not too big to fail, because conceivably there could be other platforms that could disrupt them. I can't see anything on the roadmap right now, and I think they're fine right now. But they're not too big to fail at all. So I wanted to discuss a tweet that from a person we've always kind of mentioned quite a few times, Sahil, the CEO of Gumroad. He tweeted, I used to get quite upset when so many of my early followers were Indian. Now I realize everyone wants to see people who look like them succeed to visualize themselves doing the same thing one day. I'm sorry. He's of Indian descent. That's why he's tweeted that. Sorry, just a bit of backstory. And then someone says, why would it upset you? And he says, because I felt like I wasn't gaining acceptance from the community I really wanted to, which is mostly white. Does any of that resonate with you?
Not really, to be honest. I understand what he's saying and where he's coming from, but I'm kind of like grateful for the support that I have. I don't know if that's just, I mean, I do diversity work specifically, whereas he's built an e-commerce platform, and I right. think he's from America and grew up in America, but from like day dot, I mean, the first paying Hustle Crew subscriber was like not only a Nigerian girl, but like Yoruba, like rapping, shout out Abiola. But you know, I've always found affinity with people that were like me, and I kind of pursued entrepreneurship because I was seeking out people who could relate to me, not right. only women, but like multicultural women. But you tell me, do you relate to that?
No, but I understand it. So for example, I have a homie of mine who, you know, I've mentioned him before, he wants to be a film director, and he is of Chinese descent. Now I said to him, how would you feel if your films never had any success in Hollywood, but they made billions of dollars in China, but Hollywood didn't acknowledge you, you never, you know, got any, no Oscars, nothing. And he grew up wanting to be an Oscar winning director.
Got it.
How would you feel? He said he would be fine, but there would be something that would feel missing to him.
Wow.
And that's because we've all grown up with these institutions being the benchmark. Hollywood, Oscars, Silicon Valley, you know, tech, right? And, you know, being frank, these are or have been predominantly white institutions. So if you feel like you're not getting co-signed by those institutions, it can often feel like you haven't made it. And this is what can happen sometimes. You can get to that extent where you're pushing away your own people because you are striving for something else. But I applaud the honesty, because that's not something that a lot of people would acknowledge. Like, that's a very honest statement to make. And a lot of people are criticizing him, saying, why the hell would you say this?
Because is there, like, internalized white supremacy in that statement?
Of course. That is the ultimate. There's so many people like this in all, like, you know, whole range of different communities. There are so many people that want to be the only person of their kind in their room. I'm the only one in my neighborhood. You know, like, I'm the only black exec at this company. And they say that with pride. I've heard less of that now. But growing up, there was people that were like, yo, I'm the only one that made it. You know, look at me. Do you see what I'm saying? And you know, there's a lot of insecurity. So the other thing Facebook related is they have cracked down on individuals that they can deem to be, you know, not worthy to be on their platform. Too controversial, too racist, too, you know, too dangerous to be in a platform. So they've got rid of Alex Jones. InfoWars is completely banned. Milo Yiannopoulos. He's been thrown off. A few other right-wing people. Paul Joseph Watson, I think the dude's name is. British dude. He's kind of affiliated with Alex Jones.
I follow him on Twitter.
Yeah. Farrakhan. Louis Farrakhan. So, and I feel like, to be honest, the Farrakhan thing was kind of to appease right wingers, so it didn't look like it was all just right wingers. Yeah, just throw someone black in there quickly. You know what I'm saying? Like, so, you know, for a long time on this podcast, me and you have been like, yo, man, there needs to be some oversight. Like, there has to be some editorial control on these platforms because shit is just going wild. In fact, after the Sri Lanka terrorist attack, the Sri Lanka government shut down Facebook to prevent fake news from spreading, which probably actually was a great idea. Like, I think that was fantastic. That probably saved lives, to be honest, which is an amazing thing to even have to say about a website. What do you feel about it? Like, do you feel like, because we've always said, please, like, step in, do some editorial control. Now that they've done some, I see a lot of murmurs of just like, whoa, like, is Facebook a public platform? If so, should it be regulated like one? You know, concerns about freedom of speech, concerns about they have too much power now to determine who can speak and who can't speak. I mean, there's 2 billion people that spend their whole lives on this thing. And for one 33-year-old unelected dude called Zuckerberg to decide who's worthy of a platform, I don't know. How do you feel?
Well, I think we have to remember that it's not solely Zuckerberg that's involved in this process. I mean, Facebook hires thousands of people across the world. They have people working in public policy, you know, ethics, like really experienced.
But the buck stops. Experts. The buck stops at Zuck.
The decision, you know, to censor the platform or remove people from the platform, of course, I'm sure goes with him. And then the extent to which you do that, because it's always a sliding scale with anything like this, will come down to the people that actually implement it. And I hope, you know, like everything Facebook does, these are like expert-led initiatives. I don't have a problem with it because from a personal level, like, people die as a result of hate speech.
Yeah.
People literally friggin' die, right? You've got people going out, suicide bombs, terrorist attacks, guns, whatever they feel they have the right to do as a consequence of the content that they've consumed online is resulting in the loss of innocent lives, lives of children. And whatever we can do within the tech industry to limit that damage, I think has to be done. If anything, this is too late.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we really have to ask ourselves as a society, you know, what will change? And, you know, censorship is a difficult topic because, you know, whoever has the power then has the power to control the narrative, right? That's completely. That's the biggest fear. But we are in the most advanced age of information we've ever had. So to some extent, the flow of information is still democratized through the internet. And there's like dark web and there's like informal channels and grassroots communities. So I lean towards removing people like that from the platform just because I'm just really against the stuff that they say.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you.
I mean, Alex Jones literally said that.
No. Yeah, like, no one's
make people gay.
And, of course, and he said that the Sandy Hook. He said the Sandy Hook school shooting was a false flag attack, and that led to the parents of, you know, whose children died to be harassed by his fans and followers. I think even some of them even. I think there's been like suicides that have followed on just from the BS that he said. So this guy is a bad actor. He's a horrible human being. So I'm not defending anybody on this list, really, to be honest. Like, I get why a lot of them have been banned. My concern is that where do you draw the line? So Paul Joseph Watson, I think that's the dude's name. He's an Alex Jones affiliate. But he kind of came to prominence on my radar because he was a 9/11 truth conspiracy theorist. Do you see what I'm saying? So
I follow him.
Yeah, you follow him, right? So exactly. Yeah. He does say horrible things about migrants, about Muslims, but gets like, I don't know necessarily about black people.
Finger on the pulse.
Yeah, he says a lot of trash things. Don't get twisted. I just do get nervous because I've had people say to me, people of color on tech.com, that's a racist website. I've had people say that to me, like, that's a divisive racist website.
Right.
And right now, you know, the liberal, mainstream liberal thought is that that's not a racist website and what I'm doing is acceptable.
That's not mainstream liberal thought.
No, but it is.
Understanding of oppression and systems of oppression.
Which is mainstream liberal thought, which a lot of people that are on the right side of the spectrum wouldn't agree with. Like,
there's
most
evidence for this.
I'm not denying that.
Oh, just like the way they have evidence that white is the superior race.
Okay, fair enough. But what I'm saying is that, have you never had pushback on the work that you've done? Like Hustle Crew, you've had people like...
Oh, of course.
Exactly,
yeah,
right?
All the time.
Right. And the point I make,
not sexist to support women in
exactly
tech.
Right, and obviously I'm not arguing any of those points. I agree that our platforms are valid, of course, like ours, we wouldn't have dedicated our lives to this, but what I'm saying is that what if one day those are the people that are hired into Facebook and all of a sudden they're like, we're gonna throw you guys off. And you know, I don't know,
I think that's why like purpose is so important to the
right.
work that we do. They're not ultimately like, why are they making this decision? Why are these people in particular being chosen?
Right.
Because I think what we need to do is like acknowledge that maybe there's an opportunity to like not only take action against it, but like educate people at the same time, because people need to understand like what structural oppression is, because it's invisible. It's
mm-hmm.
invisible. We can't mm-hmm. see capitalism. We can't see, you know... like white supremacy every
right.
day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We can see a lack of representation,
right.
but we don't necessarily connect the dots all the time. And what's happening is for people that are actively perpetuating these systems of oppression and actively contributing to them and actively contributing to harmful stereotypes and actively contributing to narratives that are not founded in reality, but cause people to go out and commit serious crimes like murdering people, that's something that has to be spoken about. And I feel like with every generation of humanity, our consciousness evolves.
Mm-hmm.
And when our consciousness evolves, our vocabulary expands and our ability to understand things that were previously too difficult to unpick becomes clearer and more tangible and like easier to articulate. So I feel like by the time this potential scenario you're painting out happens, our consciousness will have gone even further and we'll be having to have like the same conversations about who's right or who's wrong or who should have a voice, not only about humans, but about artificial intelligence, maybe even extraterrestrials, we don't know.
Mm.
So I just think, like, if that is the risk, then it's a risk we're taking, but it doesn't feel real, it doesn't feel, like, credible, I think there'll be bigger fish to fry.
The point I'm taking is that you say, well, if we take the risk, there's no we in this. I'm not part of Facebook. This is the point I'm making.
Yeah, but we as a society accept to let people censor, to let people censor, because we can say no.
Right, yeah.
People
on
Facebook could be like, no, leave Alex Jones on there. People could say that.
I think the point I'm making is not that they were wrong in making this decision. I just want to know a bit more about what is the process by which this happened, because Facebook, as much as it is a private platform, it's such a part of the society at large that, you know, it's almost like a quasi-governmental organization. Like if a government decided to clamp down on someone's sort of speech rights, whatever, I'd want to know what was the process and thought, like, what's the legislation behind this? What is the rules behind this? So have you seen the whole like Kim K freeing like a whole bunch of prisoners? Like, so she's got some good publicity recently because like she's been doing the work, you know, she's trying to be a lawyer. She's, you know, she's had discussions with Trump about freeing certain people who are nonviolent drug offenders, a whole bunch of cases, which has helped particularly a lot of women of color, a lot of black women, you know, and like while most people have been, you know, congratulating her, I've seen a few people are like, oh, you know, like she just jumped on the bandwagon and there was people putting in the work before her. And what do you feel about that? Is there almost kind of like a gatekeeping activism? Like, what's the word I'm looking for? There's activist gatekeepers, where it's like only certain people can do certain things. And if the good results come from the wrong person, then we don't want it. Yeah, like
that's so messed up. For me, it's kind of interesting because like, what we have is a story where 17 prisoners have been released. Now, I don't follow Kim Kardashian on social media or like watch her shows, but I know she's very popular and I know a lot of people love her. And I don't think she's necessarily known for using her platform to discuss these things. As far as I know her, she's known for using her platform to like flash her boobs and her butt and like, you know, basically put herself out there on her thing, which, you know, work it, girl, whatever. So what I find so interesting about this is you have someone who doesn't necessarily position themselves as an activist, delivering results.
Mm.
And then conversely, I'm thinking about people in the tech space, for example, who are going out there championing themselves as like increasing representation, fighting for greater diversity and inclusion. But then when we look at the stats,
No change.
You know what I mean? No change. Like, percentage of venture capital that went to women founders stayed the same year on year. But how many people be out there in the news talking about how they're going to help drive funding to female founders? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
So for me, it's just like, judge not, lest ye be judged, right?
Because completely.
17 people are free.
Yeah.
17 people's lives are free. That's probably more than the number of female founders that have been funded literally this year alone. No lies.
Yeah,
and certainly
yeah.
more than the number of black women that got venture capital funding, because I know all the black women.
Yeah.
And I know the ones that got
They're all in your phone book.
And they're all 17. You know what I mean? So it's just like, why are we hating?
Yeah. I think there was also... actually going back to the Kim K thing. Yeah, I mean, her father was a lawyer. He was on the OJ case. And... she's actually the mother of, like, you know, three black or mixed race children. So I can't understand why, you know, in her late 30s, she's kind of just kind of seeing the world for more than just, you know, let me turn up in the club. Like, she's grown up, and we just got to congratulate. And also, let's keep it real. Who's the president right now in the US? It's Trump.
Yes.
The only people that he engages with are celebrities. So whoever can, you know, do the final pass and score the goal right at the end, we've got to let them do that. Because Trump is only going to listen to other... He ain't listening to me and you. He ain't listening to Van Jones. He ain't listening to, you know, Michael Eric Dyson, whoever it's going to be. You know, he wants to listen to another superstar. And we've just got to encourage people that who are in position, whether we like them or not, to play their role. You see what I'm saying? Even if Kim K has taken the limelight from people who are more deserving. Let's say you've been in the trenches doing this work for 25 years, and then all of a sudden Kim K has come through and got the credit, right? I understand why that's frustrating, but at the same time, we want to encourage people who have power and privilege to do something. And if that means patting them on the back even more than they deserve to be patted on the back,
do it.
Sometimes we've got to do it. It's difficult.
No skin off my nose.
So on the subject of activist gatekeeping, the new phrase that we've coined, there was a campaign in the UK called 56 Black Men. It's a hashtag. So essentially, it was highlighting 56 different black men in London and in the UK who are doing various different things in their career, whether they're founders, software engineers, musicians, actors, footballers, whatever. And they had them dressed up in like black hoodies.
Yeah, shout out CFS Williams, the founder.
Yeah, and... you know, in the beginning, everybody was like, cool. I guess the whole ethos is, listen, we are not the stereotype. You know, we are not, if you see me in a hoodie, don't get skit. Like, I'm more than what you think I am. And people seem to give it credit. Like, it was on TV, you know, real grassroots campaign. And then all of a sudden they got their posters up, like, all over London and stuff like that. But then I saw a few people saying, like, yo, this is very much performative for the white gaze, you know, respectability politics, in the sense of just like, look at me, I'm the good one in the hoodie, but I'm also a footballer or a software engineer. What are your thoughts? Like, I'm firing at you. We haven't really discussed this beforehand, but what do you think?
It's so interesting because I just kind of want to like jump on my laptop and find that man in the arena quote.
We talked about it last week.
Because I just think that like, why is there a certain energy on social media where people will, and specifically Twitter, and honestly, specifically Black Twitter, where it's just like, I will always go, and I don't mean I personally, but like where one will always go on the critique. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that?
Of course, yeah.
There's this like constant theme of like, oh, as soon as anyone does anything, it's like, no, that's not good enough. Or like, that's not good enough. And
wrong.
It's like,
wrong direction,
well,
wrong.
What are you doing?
Yeah,
what
exactly.
are you doing about it?
Yeah.
I thought that campaign was amazing. Also, just from the perspective of representation, think of how many billboards and bus stops you pass on any given day in the city and the type of content that you're looking at. How many times do you see a face that's brown or black? Never.
Or even brown or black, that's in a positive light. Because often I'll see black bodies on these billboards, but it's kind of like, you know...
Criminal
or like, you know,
cautionary tale
or it's a rap thing and man are trying to look threatening on purpose. Like there was this controversy with Stormzy. He had his album called Gang Size and Prez, and like the album cover just looked, everyone was just hooded up looking goonish.
Yeah.
And fair enough, it was a dope album cover, but like sometimes I want to see other like representation of black bodies on you know, on mainstream tube stations, if you know what I'm saying. And yeah, sorry, I cut you off, but go on. Yeah, you were midpoint, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, all I was going to say was just like, look, I know that's why social media is there. I know what it's there for, just for you to think out loud. But if you care so much about changing things or shifting the narrative around a certain identity, then I think you need to come like with your own actions or your own ideas before you just jump into something and be like, nah, trash.
This is really complicated. And what I'm going to say right now, a lot of people are going to like bite me down, but I see people use the phrase the white gaze a lot.
That's so interesting because that is the first time I've heard it.
Anyone say that? Yeah, so the people who say like, you're performing for the white gaze, as in this is meant for white consumption, to let people know we're okay.
What's wrong with that though?
I mean, I get why that's
What's wrong with that? Because we need to convince black people.
Because at its worst extent, it's basically telling every black person wear a suit and tie and look sharp so that therefore you don't get shot in the street. That's where you take it to its worst extreme, where it becomes respectability politics, where it's like all about making sure that we are acceptable and packaged up neatly so that other cultures can feel safe around us, right? And I get that's to its extreme. But what I will say is that this work has to be done because at the end of the day, we do exist under the white gaze. If I'm trying to get a bank loan, or if I'm trying to avoid getting arrested by the police, yeah, like, I'm under the white gaze.
Yeah.
This is a white society, majority led in the UK. So I'm not mad at this kind of work. I understand why some people are like, this is kind of respectability politics, but at the same time, I'm also like, it's still positive. Like, what's wrong with showing a black person doing amazing things or a black man doing amazing things and highlighting that? Like, and like you said, social media is very corrosive. In fact, the way Twitter is designed, the whole quote tweet, probably one of the worst feature inventions of all time. It's great for Twitter's traction, but the quote tweet is just meant just to throw shade at people.
Yeah.
Literally, what else? There's no other context. As in, they
you
might
can
be
support
there,
people
you
as could, well.
There's sometimes it is, but more times than not, what is the quote tweet?
It's true.
I don't F with
this.
Passive aggressive. Yes,
passive aggressive.
It's
actually not even that passive.
Yeah, it's aggressive. I don't F with this. This is why this is dead. Mm. Do you know what I'm saying? And like, that's where social media is really bad. Because if I got the people that had disagreements about this thing in the room, they probably could have a cordial conversation and like break down, you know, and help guide the person in a better direction. But with Twitter, it's just more about like coming out in public and just showing how smart I am and let me just dunk on this thing and shut everybody up. You see what I'm saying? And I feel like we have too many conversations in public. That's the problem.
Mm.
We're talking about real things, yeah?
Yeah.
How do we push the culture forward? And too much of it is done in public. If you have a problem with someone's campaign, set them aside. Send them a DM and be like, guys, I'm not going to lie. I feel like this, that, and the third. I wish you luck.
But
whatever,
then how are
we
going to make tech billionaires even richer?
What do you mean?
If we stop using their platforms, how are we going to make, like, we don't make no money from going on Twitter.
Yeah, I know.
And sharing our lives on Instagram.
Yeah.
And sharing our updates on WhatsApp or whatever. Yeah. But we're still doing it. We're sheep. Yeah. We're slaves to the machine. Like, it's easier. It's easier to do that. This is the kind of, like, insidious element of tech products that we sometimes forget.
Mm.
It's easier for me to write a tweet and complain about something than it is for me to like go on the internet, find out your email address, maybe add you on LinkedIn or like whatever, and then write to you one-on-one.
Yeah.
So the way that these products are designed, like, you know, it's such a double-edged sword because like, I mean, I love Twitter and it's a great product and I'm not throwing shade on the teams that have designed it, but it's now so easy that it's like, you know, also being used in a negative way because it's the lowest friction way for me to share this opinion. So continuing in the theme of tech and ethics, let's talk about the Uber IPO.
Money.
So an opinion piece in the New York Times is titled, "The Uber IPO is a moral stain on society." I just realized it's like cut off at the end.
It's a moral stain in Silicon
Valley. A moral stain on Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
The Guardian have written a piece about how Uber drivers feel like they're treated like crap. I'm not gonna lie, I speak to my Uber drivers all the time about what their experience is.
Yeah.
I feel like that's my like firsthand evidence collecting as a tech journalist.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating because Uber is always finding ways, you know, just particularly in London, to like undercut the driver. I'm not saying that that's exclusively what they do or what they optimize or prioritize for, but you know, listening to the drivers and hearing their opinion on it, I can understand why many of them are frustrated and exasperated. For example, like with the changes to the congestion charge within London,
right?
Priuses used to be exempt from it, and the rules change. You had to be a fully electric car in order to be exempt from it.
Mm.
But the share that they take of the final ride fee has remained unchanged. So they're sort of more out of pocket than they were before. in general, as Uber has scaled, it's not like a hidden fact that drivers' quality of lives has reduced significantly.
Yeah.
And in the worst case of scenarios, you see drivers in countries like India who already in quite a financially vulnerable position overextend themselves on loans in order to acquire cars, don't make enough rides to mm-hmm. cover the costs. In one documentary I saw, a father killed himself
wow.
to escape the shame and the debt. And of course, this is, you know, one very sad, harrowing, disappointing story, but the reality is it is a part of the Uber story.
Mm.
So what do you think about the Uber IPO? Is it a moral stain on Silicon Valley?
I think to a certain extent, yes. I mean, you're going to have a handful of people, relatively speaking, a handful, who are going to make an enormous fortune off this IPO. And the masses of people involved in the company, quote unquote, their workers, even though they say they're not their workers, they're independent business owners or whatever crap line they're spinning, which isn't true. Like, we know this ain't the case. Like, are going to walk away with hardly anything. I know they've set up a scheme now to remunerate the people who are their drivers. Like, I think if you've driven over a certain amount of hours, you get some kind of cash bonus, whatever. But it's nothing compared to the general wealth that's going to be created once the company goes public. I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it. I mean, it's a company that doesn't guarantee their staff minimum wage, essentially. They if you drive for Uber, there's no guarantee that you're going to make enough to even survive. So how happy could I be? I mean, I'm a hypocrite. I use the service. The service is amazingly convenient. And the thing is also is, and the thing is also that the black cabs in London, which are the equivalent of like the yellow taxis in New York, I found they never used to stop for me. Like, I couldn't get one. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. I wasn't allowed to get in one, basically, essentially. Like, and they were hella expensive, and the drivers weren't great. So, I mean, they're great, but like, they wouldn't stop for me, so they're not great to me. And Uber kind of helped. So I'm not unaware of the fact that Uber has had some positive impact into my life, but I'm just concerned that we're generating enormous amounts of wealth for people. And
with every IPO, and I just like, think of that.
Yeah, but it's worse with Uber. So with Pinterest, who's been harmed by Pinterest? Mm. Pinterest hasn't got 1,000+ people who have to manually like pin stuff and they get paid $2 an hour. Do you see what I'm saying? If it was like that, then I would be like, yeah, I'm concerned. But with Uber and Lyft specifically, they have a workforce which they don't claim as their workforce and are able to kind of skirt,
yeah,
you know, what let's should not be their responsibilities.
In the same basket either, because I mean, Uber's what is like the what in is international countries?
No, but Lyft has kind of that smiley face like veneer on top of it. Like, but it's also what only what is the difference? US,
where like labor laws exist, whereas Uber's operating in like Nigeria, where they're pretty damn right, relaxed. Yeah,
but let's so let me
earning like well whatever they can.
Even just from what I know from how Uber exists in the UK and how Uber exists in the US and Lyft. There isn't much difference. The Uber drivers in the US are not guaranteed minimum wage, are they? They're not. They don't have benefits. They're not workers. Speaking of Uber, there's somebody who is making some monies from the IPO, somebody that you probably didn't know.
Oh, the single ladies. Oh.
You revealed it. So Beyonce, apparently, back in 2015, she did a gig. And instead of saying, yo, pay me your cash, she was like, give me the stock. I want equity. And so she was given $6 million in restricted stock units.
Nice.
Yeah, so I was trying to work out, this is a little bit of, you know, hodgepodge journalism. I was trying to work out what that works out to. And I think the company the company's 4x'd in value. Or yeah, 3 to 4x the value since that time.
Mm.
So if she has like, as long as her stock hasn't been diluted.
I was going to say, better be preferred stock.
But yeah, if the stock hasn't been diluted, then she's made 4x from that 6 million. Don't hold me to that. I could be completely wrong.
Beyonce.
But shout out to Beyonce. Ownership, baby. She listens to
it. She needs sponsorship.
She must have listened to that episode where we were like, forget Reebok. And she's like, yeah, even though this is 2015. But Beyonce. Anyways.
Let's talk about Jack Dorsey.
I feel like we talked about Twitter so much, but God, yeah.
It's where we spend most of our lives.
Yeah, it's true.
It's funny because I've actually like been on a bit of a like Twitter
detox. Yeah, I've been like, where's ABBA, man?
I know.
What's going on?
You noticed. Thanks, where's ABBA? Thanks.
Normally I tweet about you and like, you'll like it within 2 seconds. I'm like,
no, but you 15 know what?
Seconds? How dare you? Yeah. Look at my clock. It's kind of crazy. Any minute now.
When you work remote, as we do, and you're kind of like solo a lot of the time, Twitter basically becomes your office space. It becomes like the background noise, the kind of interactions that you completely. Have.
Yeah, yeah.
So you sort of like rely on it. It's like the default, okay, I need a break, go on Twitter, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And I've just been experimenting in the last few weeks where I've just been like, if I don't do that, what else will I do?
The world still exists. It's been great
because, like, I just, like, read more, or I look out the window, or I, like, listen to Audible, and I just think...
Teach me.
I still love Twitter, but I've been trying to, like, release my... it's hold on me a little bit.
Yeah, for real.
You know, that said, let's talk about Jack Dorsey, because an interesting story came out last week in fashion section of New York Times, actually. Jack Dorsey is Gwyneth Paltrow for Silicon Valley. So what they're basically talking about is Jack Dorsey being an influencer. I saw the word manfluencer, and I'm just like, I don't even want to use that word. What does that even mean?
I like it, actually, because it kind of explains, because, like, this is a whole segment of, like, internet culture that's pretty much someone like Joe Rogan,
yes,
who's the influencer. Now I see a bag of man doing jiu-jitsu, a lot of people doing, like, flotation tank, meditation, and all the stuff that he kind of talks about, and they've got it from listening to Joe Rogan. But they're the kind of people that would laugh at influencer culture on Instagram.
Oh, I see.
But they listen to Joe Rogan and following him like gospel. He's a manfluencer. I love it. It's like a brofluencer. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, as in, like, it's kind of,
so,
like,
you don't realize you've been, like, brainwashed, but you are.
Action figure. Yeah, it's the exact same thing.
Yeah.
But it's a great term. Like,
it's so interesting because they've actually done studies, and people who do not believe they're susceptible to advertising are the people who are the most susceptible to advertising. And then people who are like, oh, actually, yeah, like, you know, if I see a lot of Coke being drunk on the TV, I'm probably going to want a Coke later that day. Through the same experiment were the people who then became, like, the least susceptible to that messaging. But anyway, the whole premise of this is, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow became famously known, or rather infamously known, for her lifestyle platform Goop.
Shout out to Goop.
Which has actually, it's a venture-backed company now. They've launched an e-commerce platform. She's had some controversial products on there, notably the Jade Eggs for vaginal cleansing or something, rejuvenation, I'm not sure. I'm not going to lie, when I first started work, I subscribed to that podcast, to the newsletter, and I genuinely found it inspirational. Like,
right.
Because this was, like, you know, 2009, recession era, and I just imagined, like, will there ever be a time where I could afford $300 vegan leather sneakers?
Right.
Like, is that something that happens when, like, you do your career and, like, you succeed, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, the premise of this article is basically, like...
But hold on. So the Goop is basically kind of, like, self-help... ethical,
aspirational,
very expensive, but also anti-scientific in a sense, like, a lot of the stuff is, like, not necessarily backed up by science.
It's
so
the Jade Egg, I mean, it's a bit hippie. Just hippies because I kind of consider myself one,
so
but,
do I, but right,
know.
But it's not necessarily backed up with hard science. So like, this product will help you not be tired, and if you just, like, it's a dream catcher,
it's a bit
and, like,
frou-frou.
Yeah, there we go. All right, cool,
hippie,
yes,
not
but
you know,
selling it at crazy prices to the rich people,
exactly,
yeah, that's.
So it's this very interesting niche intersection of people who have a lot of money, want to be living their best life, do not conform to the status quo, consider themselves somewhat alternative, but yet all migrate to the same platform to
right,
be a
yeah.
part of this
track. Yeah.
Anyway, so now what we see is Jack Dorsey creating a similar cult following for all of the things that he promotes. Intermittent fasting being one of the hugest ones, meditation retreats, etc. So we now have men in Silicon Valley who desire to have the, you know, leadership powers, authority that Jack Dorsey has, adopting all of his lifestyle rituals. My question for you, when will you start fasting?
So the thing is, actually, a lot of the stuff that he does, and I felt kind of attacked by this article.
Why?
Because some of the stuff that he does, I do. Because the thing is, we're all now existing and watching the same kind of platforms. I mean, some of us, I listen to, if you look at my podcast list, it's very varied. So I've got a lot of, like, you know, black-centric content, a lot of, quote-unquote, you know, hip-hop content podcast. But I also have a lot of tech podcasts as well. And even I listen to Joe Rogan sometimes. So a lot of this stuff is, you know, quite commonly heard. Intermittent fasting, ketogenic diet, cold showers. And this, a lot of this is very much like in the tech, you know, everybody's doing it kind of thing. So about three of the things that he does, I do. You know what I'm saying? Even meditation retreat, I was thinking about going to. I'm kind of exposing myself here as a real Silicon Valley bro here. And I was considering going. But the difference, I think, and this is going to sound so hypocritical because I'm defending the shit that I like, is that I wouldn't say that he's the same as Gwyneth Paltrow because he's not selling anything. He's not saying, guys, like...
You don't know that.
Come on. Okay,
he might be getting some affiliate kickbacks, man.
The day that Jack Dorsey is like, this is my website, be like me, I will be like, yeah, he's exactly like Gwyneth Paltrow. But he's not selling anything. He's basically saying, this is what works for me. If you want to try this thing, you can do it. And a lot of this stuff, like intermittent fasting,
You don't know that, though. He might call that meditation for free.
Okay, I ain't heard it. But if it does exist, everybody correct me in it. And a lot of this stuff does have some scientific backing. There is a lot of data that intermittent fasting is really good for your health.
That's true.
There is a lot of data that cold showers do really great. Effectively, people that have depression. People that have depression, they're told to like swim in cold waters. It kind of has shown to help.
Inflammation is the root cause of so many problems.
It's a factor.
Including potentially depression.
Yeah, it's a factor.
Exposure
yeah.
to extreme temperatures yeah. reduces it.
Right. So I feel like it's one of those things where it's a pithy hot take. Where it's like, oh, he's just like Gwyneth Paltrow, and it sounds funny enough to write an article yeah. about it to make the comparison, but I don't think it holds up to scrutiny. Like, I think it's just like, this is the stuff that, but like I said, maybe I'm too close to it. It's stuff that I'm doing. So when you're in a, the thing is, when someone's in a quote unquote like cult, you don't know you're in a cult. To yeah. you, it's the best thing ever. Even though I'm not in a cult, there's no one that I'm doing it.
You're in the manfluencer cult. You're in the brofluencer cult. What's your secret handshake? Teach me the secret handshake.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Let's call this episode a day anyways. That's the end of this episode of Techish. I'm going to leave it on me being insulted. Use the hashtag Techish.
Yes.
And, you know, write a review.
Techish on Twitter. Leave us reviews on iTunes. Did you enjoy listening to this episode? Oh, I know you did.
And also, actually, we're going to start, again, putting exclusive content on our Patreon.
Yes.
So some people are like, these episodes are too short. Like, I want it more. I want an hour. I'm like, well, to be honest, half an hour seems to work fine, but if you want extra, then holler at our Patreon. You can subscribe for as little as $5, and you can get extra Techish that nobody else will get.
That's
exclusive.
A
That's a Starbucks.
That's one Starbucks.
It's exclusive content.
You can get other stuff as well.
Like what?
If you pay more money, you can get one for one time.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah,
nobody has booked that yet. If anyone wants to book the one
on
star, if anyone wants one to one time, I mean ABBA.
Don't sleep
fix
on
your
this.
Career, fix your life, everything.
Fix everything.
Holla. Ciao.